Hey everyone. Back in 1977, George Lucas had a plan B, just in case his little space movie flopped. He was going to make a very low-budget sequel to it, and the novelization to that sequel was trusted to none other than Alan Dean Foster, who wrote it before a movie was even made, and then the movie was never made, making this the very first Star Wars original novel. And with no other movies or legacy to draw on, it's pretty weird. Today's book is Star Wars, Splinter of the Mind's Eye by Alan Dean Foster. And this is The Book Pile, a podcast about the best of books and the worst of books. If this is your first time to the podcast, welcome, and maybe suggest checking out our back catalog of over 170 episodes with as many books. And may I add that all of the episodes before number 142 include my co-host David Vance on every episode, rather than his current every other week schedule. I'm Kellen Erskine. I'm a comic, a father, and as a Star Wars fan as a kid, I would sometimes try and move stuff with my mind and never succeeded. But as a Californian, I often think back on what might have happened had I been trying to use the Force when the Loma Prieta earthquake struck in 1989, the one that broke the Bay Bridge and stopped a World Series game. I probably would have immediately tried to run away to Dagobah for training, or at the very least would have chased those powers for way too many years. As per our current usual, Dave is out this week selling bootleg cassette tapes of Ace of Base albums on a sidewalk in North Hollywood, but he'll be back next week for a very special episode, a live recording in front of a live audience as we roast the novelization of The Force Awakens, also by Alan Dean Foster. I thought that this episode would be a fun precursor to that one. Please come back for that one. It'll be released Monday, March 18th. We recorded it last November, and I've been so excited to finally post it. If you want to see me live, I'm going to be in San Diego, May 11th. Details coming soon on that. Grass Valley, California, May 18th. Sunnyvale, California, May 30th through June 2nd. Then I'll be in Winnipeg, Manitoba at Rumors Comedy Club, June 11th through the 15th. I do have more shows that I hope to announce very soon. Go to KellenErskine.com for all those tickets. Now, this is usually the part of the episode where I would tell you that you could support the podcast by buying today's book if the book sounds good to you. However, I also want to be totally honest with you. Don't buy this book. It's not weird enough to even be interesting, and it's not bad enough to be fun. Foster's novelization of the movie Transformers was at least full of so much desperately fancy word use that it almost reads like a comedy. This one falls short. It falls short of both greatness and badness. So that brings us to these questions. What is this book and why does it exist? As I briefly mentioned up top, George Lucas wanted a story in place that he could go to as a reference for later adapting a screenplay to something that could be cheaply produced as a sequel to A New Hope if Star Wars bombed at the box office. That's the crazy context behind this book, because that means that this book is what Empire Strikes Back, the greatest Star Wars movie, could have been or almost was. So with all of that, it also means that had Lucas known that he was creating what would be the biggest box office success in film history at the time, this book wouldn't be here. But then this episode wouldn't either, and quite possibly Alan Dean Foster's livelihood. So we do have to pay respect to George Lucas's insecurity. But this also makes such an odd story because I have never heard of a case where a novelist was given an assignment to write a story with a low budget in mind, like a story about a low budget movie, meaning he had guidelines put in place, like that he had to keep it all on one planet. Then there couldn't be too many characters. Han Solo couldn't be in it because Harrison Ford hadn't signed a contract for any more movies at the time. And on top of all that, when Foster sent an early draft to George Lucas, Lucas's note was for Foster to remove an X-wing dogfight with a TIE fighter at the beginning of the story, because it would make it too special effects heavy. So not only does this Star Wars story not have any wars, it barely has stars. Also, for even more context, each Star Wars movie has between 3 and 12 planets. So it's like this movie would have been essentially one of the boring episodes of The Mandalorian. So for the remainder of this episode, I'm going to tell you what this whole story is about, how else it is wildly different from anything else Star Wars, and then I'm going to list off my favorite quotes. Because on top of a small, slow story, it also has some typically bananas conversations and descriptions that are Foster's signature. I would say spoiler alert, but can you spoil something that was never good? I'll just say rest of the story alert. So here's the story. Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia crash land on a swamp planet. That's the only time there are spaceships in this. When the book starts and they crash to the ground. They end up in an Imperial mining town, steal some Imperial mining outfits, end up getting into a flirty wrestling match in the mud. I'm not making any of this up. And then they're arrested and put in jail because fighting is against the law on this planet. In jail, they make friends with two creatures called the Yuzzums, which are essentially drunk Wookiees. They break out with the help of an old woman who knows the Force and claims that there's a big kyber crystal they need to go steal from a temple. So they break out, which I'm assuming is also against the law, and make their way to this temple in a vehicle that Foster calls a crawl high. I'm surprised Foster didn't include spaceships called Zoom Zoom seats. On their way, they have a brief adventure where they cross a lake on a giant lily pad. And then Luke defeats the warrior of a tribe in a mock fight. You know, generic Star Wars stuff. Anyway, they get to the temple. Luke gets trapped under a rock and Darth Vader shows up to fight none other than Princess Leia with a lightsaber. She's never trained, but she still holds her own for a good 10 minutes before Luke can free himself and then profess his love to Leia. And then he gets his turn fighting Darth Vader. He cuts off Vader's arm and sends him head over heels into a dark, deep pit where Vader survives but is no longer a threat today. Hurry, let's get out of here, but not in a spaceship. The end. The only thing that this book has over Empire Strikes Back is that at least Luke doesn't get stuffed into a disemboweled tauntaun for a warm nap. Now for a few examples of how the story differs from the Star Wars universe as we know it. To Foster's credit, there was no Star Wars library. There were no other movies, no online sources like Wookiepedia, which sounds like a joke, but to my fellow nerds who are nodding with me in agreement right now, it definitely is not a joke. There was no expanded universe. There was only the original drafts of the first screenplay and some additional notes from George Lucas. But even with that, it's wild to see how Foster doesn't even seem to try to match the Star Wars tone half the time. Like how the characters in this story will say stuff like, well, thank the Force. I'm surprised there aren't moments where they're like, well, what a Force day to you. How about this exclamation from an angry Imperial officer? What the double moons is happening here? I'm guessing that in Foster's mind, that's the space version of the F word. Also, there are some scenes that are uncharacteristically gory. Like this one time when those Yuzzum creatures are helping Luke and Leia with their prison escape. It says, quote, the first Yuzzum was standing over the limp forms of three troopers. He was using a droid to beat the fourth soldier to a pulp. The droid he was holding by one leg was coming apart at roughly the same rate as the man. God. Part of me was to see that with the jovial Star Wars theme blaring over it. And then some parts of this just seem so out of character for our main characters. First up, there's a moment where Luke slaps Leia in the face to keep their disguises convincing to this public. Yikes, right? Also, it doesn't work. So how are they still friends? At another point, Princess Leia faints with the threat of being interrogated. Is that the Princess Leia we all know? Reading this book at certain points, it just made me wonder if Alan Dean Foster had even watched Star Wars or just I don't know, saw that original poster and was like, I think I got it. For example, since I was a kid, one of my favorite lines in all of Star Wars has been when Princess Leia calls Chewbacca a walking carpet. Just great, right? Short, quippy jab, classic Leia. But at one point in this book, Leia responds with the most literal, fully explained insult I've ever heard. This officer is speaking in this threatening tone to her, and he says, I always find out what I want to know. And then Princess Leia says, that's funny, because you strike me as having a particularly limited capacity for learning. Nice. Cut him to his core, Leia. At one point, it says, she was nodding excitedly. If the Sircarposians find out, they'll quit the Empire faster than a bureaucrat can quote forms. All right, slow down, Johnny Carson. And then there's Luke. You know Luke Skywalker, who in A New Hope, he says stuff like, but I was going to the Tashi station to pick up some power converters. We all know those moments, right? But to Alan Dean Foster, Luke is this guy. We still have a long way to go, according to your plotted location. Just because something full of teeth and claws hasn't pounced on us from every tree doesn't mean such creatures don't thrive here. Responsibility is a dead issue now. It's been superseded by survival. It's a good thing that Foster wasn't allowed to write Han Solo into this, because he probably would have had him say something like, I concur, and then both of them would just walk together, matching in step. One of the funniest things to me was this creature that Foster came up with called a Yuzum. It's this big, hairy, humanoid thing. It's really strong. There are two main ones in this story, and one of their names is Hin. So it's like Foster took Chewbacca and Han Solo and just made him into one character. I'm surprised there weren't other characters like Jabba the Greedo or Lando Calakbar. Now, just a quick word about Luke and Leia's relationship. It's not Alan Dean Foster's fault, to his credit. George Lucas had only written one movie at this point, and he did establish sort of a will they, won't they. And by the way, even George Lucas hadn't even decided yet that they were brother and sister. So, with that, suffice it to say, this whole book is filled with weird tension like this. Quote, then their eyes met with a gaze that could have penetrated light years. And whenever he looked at her, the other caused emotions to boil with him like soup too long in the fire. Okay, Shakespeare. Now, I'm not going to spend any more time on that from this book. And I also have to say that too many jokes are already out there about Luke and Leia. But as a side note, I think that George Lucas could have saved most of this issue with a joke, just making a joke about it. Like, even if he still wanted to have this twist in Return of the Jedi that Luke and Leia were siblings, their reaction to each other could have been more repulsed. Right? More realistic, like, oh no, that's so mortifying to know that now because of those few little romantic gestures we've had in the past. But Lucas just leaned into it and made it infinitely worse by having Leia react to Luke. If you recall, when Luke says, you're my sister, Leia says, I know. Somehow I've always known. No, you didn't, because George Lucas didn't. I watched an interview with him recently, and he said that he came up with it when he was writing Return of the Jedi because he needed Luke to break during his fight with Vader in the Emperor's office or whatever that place is. The Emperor's, is it the Emperor's bedroom? It's never quite spelled out to us. He clearly has his favorite chair in there. How funny would that have been if Darth Vader and Luke during that last epic lightsaber battle, if they like passed by a big fancy bed with too many pillows on it, and there's like a stormtrooper shaped teddy bear. Anyway, while Luke and Vader are fighting, there's that scene where Luke just sort of hides under a stairwell and sort of meditates because he refuses to hurt his father as he's getting egged on by the Emperor. But then Lucas had Darth Vader say, ah, you have a sister. He had him say that so that Luke would then be determined to go stop Darth Vader from going after Leia. He just needed a reason for Skywalker to come out and continue to fight, but I feel like there could have been other solutions to make Luke come out and attack. Like, couldn't Vader have just called him a big chicken? All right, here are some of my favorite quotes from this book, Splinter of the Mind's Eye. At one point, Luke hears Obi-Wan's ghost say, "Relax, don't try to force the Force." And I am positive that Foster was hoping that would make it into a future movie. Ugh, doesn't it just... It sounds like the slogan of like a knockoff Jedi school, like a Jedi community college. At one point when describing the sound of a giant swamp worm, Foster writes, "A low lymph-curdling ululation issued from within." So aside from having to look up ululate, what does the lymph-curdling mean? Like, no matter what version of it I imagine, it just sounds like a nightmare. How about this long combination of fancy words to tell us it's kind of freezing out? Quote, "While the temperature would probably not become dangerously cold, it still could combine with the omnipresent moisture to give him an uncomfortable and potentially debilitating chill." So, it's cold? Or how about this, instead of just saying that Leia's hair was messy? "A nebulous maze of undisciplined strands surrounded her head and face." Or how about this, when Luke is trekking through a swamp? Quote, "Once he saw something that looked like a 4-meter-long pale snake slither off into the underbrush. As he strode cautiously over the path it had taken, he saw that it had left a groove track lined with luminous mucus in the soft earth. But Luke wasn't impressed. He had spent little time in zoological study." All right. Thanks for the insight into his education. And finally, this one. He describes something as being white as the inside of a trooper's belly. And it just made me wonder, does he think that stormtroopers are white robots? Or even worse, just like white creatures? Because he calls it their belly. That's my only conclusion as to how he would have landed on that phrasing. But that means that even after the first movie where Luke and Han take the stormtrooper's white armor off and wear it, I mean, did Foster think that something way more horrific had happened to those stormtroopers? If so, that's incredibly lymph-curdling. Thanks for listening to Just Me. And again, come back next week for a big, long episode with me and Dave in front of a great crowd as we cover Alan Dean Foster's novelization of Star Wars, The Force Awakens. Do, 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 do.